Hello, my friend, and welcome to the 512th episode of the Sales Podcast. I'm Wes Schaefer, the Sales Whisperer, your host. Today, I am pleasantly surprised with this guest, Don Winner. I am pitched at least five times a day, sometimes 10 times a day, from PR agencies and, I don't know, wannabe PR agencies and who knows what. Hey, great guest. You see these form letters, and it's just... You can see it a mile away, especially when you get, 200 a month for years. But I, a lot of times I'll reach out to people as I run across them and people that seem intriguing to me. So Don came to me through an agency. I took a quick look and, I liked what I saw and scheduled him. And, oh, my goodness. And look, when I'm screening these guests, I don't spend hours screening them, right? I look at their body of work. I look at their presence online. I look for any kind of negatives, if there's something out there. And then, so if that passes the sniff test, and I've got an opening, I'll have them on the show. And, Don's story is amazing. What he has built is amazing. And he's still young. He's got a family. You're going to love his story. You're going to be inspired by the methodical way he's gone about growing. So you are in for a treat, okay? As usual, for the next seven, this one plus six more. Is that right? No, one, two, three. This one plus seven more. Vidyard is a sponsor, so please listen to this short little advertisement and then, give them a try. Vidyard.com/whisper. I grew my business through SEO. In the very beginning, it was cold calling, but then it was organic. It was, and one of the key things I did organically was create video. I used YouTube to get the juice, the traffic from that big source, right? That big site. And I would embed it on my website. And I still do that to a degree. But for the most part, when I interview my guests, right, I control the video. I will embed it on YouTube, but I also own the video. I put it on my own host. Okay, then I can share it as I want to. And I've used video and email for many years. I've had several guests on as well in that space. So take a listen, Vidyard. Give them a free try, okay? And heck, if nothing else, to thank them for taking a risk on me by sponsoring these 10 episodes. Okay, so take a listen to this, and then we will get on with the show. Vidyard is an easy-to-use yet powerful video solution that makes it simple to create videos, host them ad-free, share them with others, and track their performance. Whether you're recording a video for one person or sharing it with the world on your website, it's easy to manage your video content. The Vidyard solution is built for business. It has robust analytics, integrations with top enterprise tools like HubSpot, and customization options that answer your unique needs. Look, email isn't dead, but it sure can be boring. Use Vidyard to record and send sales videos to connect with prospects, convert opportunities, and close deals. You can put a face to your name with video. I do this. Record your face, your screen, or both for prospecting videos, follow-ups, product demos, and more. Sign up for Vidyard free today by going to vidyard.com/whisper. And just like all of you, the team at Vidyard can't keep up with all those promo codes on podcasts and blah, blah, blah. So they're making it easy to sign up, okay? No promo code. Just go to vidyard.com/whisper to start using Vidyard completely free. And as a bonus, get their high conversion virtual sales playbook. Vidyard.com/whisper. And look, don't tell me you don't have any video or you don't want to do video. I don't want to hear it. Everything's Zoom nowadays. Record your interviews, record your consultations, get the permission from your customers to share it, and you're off and running. I have done that in my sellmoreofeverything.com course. I've got some clients that have allowed me, given me permission to share our consult. So that's some little bonuses you get as well. Okay, so start doing your video. And from this interview with Don, you'll know how to create processes to leverage it and grow. Here we go. Don Winter, salesman, entrepreneur, author of Building an Elite Organization, a blueprint to scaling a high-growth, high-profit business, currently in Asheville, North Carolina. Welcome to the Sales Podcast. Man, how the heck are you?
I'm doing awesome. Thank you, Wes, so much for having me here today.
So you're moving all around. Must be nice to have some options, huh? Build a little business, make a little income, travel around, avoid the heat. It's good to be you, isn't it?
It is good to be me. Very, very blessed. Very blessed for sure.
So you are relatively young. I'm looking at your experience in real estate. You were killing it as an agent and then launched into your own business. Now you have multiple entities. What the heck's lighting your fire, man? Why don't you just like go in the basement, play some Fortnite, drink some monsters? I mean, why are you so ambitious?
Yeah, relatively young is the key word there. I like that. But
just gray hair, man. You're a lot younger.
Exactly. 36. Started in real estate and in the world of sales in my my late teens and started my career in 20 in real estate. But that, you know, that internal drive, right? I see you have seven kids. I only have a couple.
That's the gray hair. Have some more kids. You'll be gray.
I agree. And you know, I think if you and I both knew what the exact answer to is, where does the drive come from, right? We wouldn't be on the sales podcast. We'd be on the parenting podcast right now. Some of it is just, you know, instilled. I had this entrepreneurial kind of drive at a young age, you know, probably like yourself. You know, I grew up lower middle class, I think is the nice terminology for it. And you know, she needed to work to have anything I wanted. And my dad told it at my wedding, the story how he knew I was an entrepreneur in kindergarten when I started selling donuts to my classmates. And that's kind of where it began for me. I just had that kind of drive to kind of make things happen from a very young age and kind of self-driver. And it's carried me through, especially in the early stages of my career.
Where'd you get the donuts?
I got the donuts from my parents. So a business where you have no cost of materials. It's a pretty profitable business. My parents would pack those little six pack of Hostess donuts into my lunch bag. And I started selling to my classmates for 50 cents a piece. And the school found out after a few weeks and my donut supply dried up. But that was kind of my first take of making some money, and carried all the way through my childhood. I ran literally, you know, lawn care businesses in middle school and hired my friends just had that desire from a pretty young age.
A little Tom Sawyer, huh? Get kids to pay you to do your chores.
My parents did not pay me to do my chores. So those weren't,
pay
my buddies to do them. I never went that far. I don't know if my parents would have allowed that.
Come on, man. It's all good. That's awesome. So you got into real estate. So if I do some math, so 2008 was 13 years ago. So you would have been early 20s. So you were already doing well in real estate when the Great Recession hit. Is that correct?
Yeah, it is correct. So I got started, a really quick kind of story there. In 2005, I was going to Drexel University as a college student studying finance. I thought from eighth grade on, I was going to be a financial advisor because I knew I was good at math. And a financial advisor came in a career day in eighth grade and said, "Hey, look, as financial advisor, you get to be your own boss. You know, you're in charge." Showed us a chart that financial advisors made more money than doctors, lawyers, accountants, et cetera. So that's what I'm going to do. And went to school. That was what I was determined to do. But I'd wait tables on the weekends to support my way through high school. I moved out of my home in high school, my parents' home, and through college. And this guy convinced me to come work for him. His name was Nathan Robinson. And Nathan was in the ADT security business. So he hired me. I didn't really know what the job was other than he told me I'd make $2,000 a week if I came to work for him. And so I did at 19. And my job was, you know, door-to-door sales.
My dogs do the same thing, man. Sorry
about that. So my job was door-to-door sales. and my first paycheck was $5,280. And sorry,
it's all good.
Hang on 1 second, girls. Come on.
$5,280.
We're in a condo right now. In between, we just got in here today. In between my Asheville houses right now. So anyway, apologize. The dogs are in the room next to me.
Hey, it's fine. So was that a 2 week paycheck or 4 week paycheck or what?
So yeah, I made $5,280 for my first 2 weeks. And that was one of my worst paychecks. And the gentleman, Nathan,
selling alarm systems.
Yep. Door to door. So mainly going to new homeowners who just bought a home and knocking on their door and offering to sell them a home, and learned all the kind of old school door to door sales tactics and tricks kind of just by knocking on a lot of doors. It was every 51 doors I knocked on, I made a sale. So I just knocked on a heck of a lot of doors. And that gentleman who owned the company, later I found out he had never had anybody make $1,000 a week, let alone $2,000 a week. But I think because he gave me that expectation, that was what was normal, that was what was expected, I went out there with that mindset. And that gentleman happened to also be a real estate agent. So this is 2005, 2006, real estate market's on fire. Convinced me that if I could sell alarm systems knocking on doors, I do great in real estate. So literally I didn't sleep for a couple of weeks, took my classes online, got my real estate license, and I flew out to a marketing sales conference literally the day after I got my real estate license. And I learned the power of having a unique selling proposition. And
what was the conference?
It was actually a Dan Kennedy conference. So my marketing proposition, my unique selling proposition was, your home sold guaranteed or I'll buy it. And the month I got my real estate license was October 2006, which happened to be the peak of the real estate market. That's when property values hit their top and the market started slowing down. So the guarantee to sell people's homes when the market's slowing down was a good time for that message. And I put out that message anywhere and everywhere, from traditional, still the time when newspapers still, were a thing, and, doing bandit kind of style ads in newspapers, to Craigslist was just coming out, to digital marketing was just coming out, to radio and television were and still, in my opinion, are a thing. And we do still use today, and just putting that message everywhere, and things took off, really, really fast. And grew that, as you said, through the downturn, which came a couple of years later.
So how many homes did you have to buy?
So it's interesting. So that was the initial, marketing message. It was actually, your home sold in 68 days guaranteed, I'll buy it. And it was about, shifting and taking away the risk for people, the fear that came in a challenging market. And, frankly, very seldom did I have to step in and buy their home there. But I started having some people who couldn't wait 68 days or didn't want to wait, and they had more of a distressful situation. So we developed soon after our immediate buyout program. We'll just buy your home cash as is, no contingencies. And so we'd offer both options. Hey, we'll guarantee to sell your home through the market, get you the most for your home, or we'll just step in and buy it. And that led to us becoming a home flipper and buying homes. So, through the downturns, basically we met with motivated home sellers. I wasn't out buying, most of the product I bought wasn't from, banks or foreclosures. I was meeting, sellers who were in a state of need to sell in a kind of recessionary environment, and offering them solutions. And so the not being able to sell their home happened maybe 20 times over, dozen plus years of doing this. But we bought, thousands of homes by choice, by providing this, cash offer to buy their home. And that's really how we built what became our investment business that we run today.
So were you flipping them, or were you renting them out?
Yeah. So in the beginning it was, we'd step in, come meet with somebody, do a full valuation of what their home was worth, and provide them with this range of options. And then if we bought the home, way I looked at it from a, kind of a simple standpoint is, look, property values are going down. In 2008, 2009, 2010, there was no doubt property values were going down. So I wasn't going to own that property long-term. It was to model out the fact that, hey, it's going to probably be worth less. The repaired value of that home is going to be less in 6 months than the repaired value of that home today. And I'd step in and model that accordingly. And I'd turn it around, sell it to a generally a first-time home buyer. So everything was buy, improve, sell until the market hit its bottom. When market hit its bottom around 2011-ish, when we said, all right, now it's time to build a portfolio. Now it's the time to start buying as much as we can. And now you want to hold because property values are going up. And that's really when we started, growing much of what is DLP today and much of our, investment platform today.
How did you protect yourself, though? I mean, if markets, if they are going down, you've got this depreciating asset, did you have buyers lined up? Or, I mean, just like out here, I rented in California for 6 years and waiting for the bottom. And then I bought at the bottom. People were like, "You're crazy." I mean, we were renting just a tract home. It was huge, like 40, like, I don't know, 4,700 square feet. But it was just a tract home, no HOA. We moved into it December of 04. And people are like, "Oh, this thing gets doubled in value in 3 years. It was 350, now it's $700,000." I'm like, "Well, this house ain't worth $700,000." I remember standing there in the cul-de-sac with my wife. I said, "Okay, look around. If this trend continues, then in 3 more years, the beginning of 08, this house will be worth $1.4 million. It's going to double again in 3 years." I'm like, "No way." So somewhere between right now and 3 years, this thing is capped out. And our neighbors, there were two models, our exact models in the cul-de-sac. And they were nicer. They were at the end, bigger yards. They had pools and upgrades, but they sold for $850,000 in like early 07, late 06, somewhere in there. And the house we were renting got foreclosed. And I wanted to buy it. I didn't particularly want to own it, but I knew it was a value. It sold for $258,000 at foreclosure. So freaking crazy, right? So, when you got this falling knife like that, how do you buy a 350, 700, 1.4, 850,000, 258? How would you step in and buy that? I'd be afraid to jump in and try to flip that thing. It was so, but we were literally at the epicenter of this fraud, right? Right where we are in Riverside County. It was, I mean, nurses were owning five homes, interest only. I mean, it was really bad. So maybe it was too crazy out here. I don't know, but
Yeah, it's a great topic, and we did it initially. It was in Pennsylvania. So I grew up in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, is where I started the company, hour north of Philadelphia. We were doing this throughout that region. And then in around 2012, we also did expand into Tampa, Florida, which at the time was arguably the worst market in the country. But where we were in Pennsylvania didn't have the kind of decline that you experienced. Property values from their peak to their bottom went down by about 25%. What we were focused on doing is we weren't buying $700,000 homes, to your point, and trying to flip them. We were buying $100,000 homes, $70,000 homes, $130,000 homes, where not only that market has always been strong in all cycles comparatively, and today's market probably better than ever, in that you always have the alternative of renting it as well and being able to generate positive cash flow. So that was a important point, and we always realized if we got stuck and we couldn't sell this home, we could always rent it and cash flow. So that was a per se a safety net. But the big thing is we had to really know the market, and so we invested heavily in the markets we knew, where we're confident in what the value would be, and we'd have to budget for a decline. Right? I didn't assume that, hey, in 6 months when I'm done renovating this home, it's going to be worth what it is today. I'm going to model depending on the home, the market, the price range, et cetera, that is going to have declined by 5 or 10%. So I got to buy it at a price that I can factor in for a decline in values, because we were going through this environment where property values were going down, call it 1% a month. So that's how we would model it. And but we weren't buying, $700,000, $850,000 homes, expecting we could flip them because that market was, very soft and challenging, to your point. So. And then that's really what led to the beginning of our investment portfolio of building a rental portfolio, is understanding the great value of owning these types of assets and producing reoccurring cash flow, versus just selling them for, ordinary income and flipping them.
Nice. All right, man. So has the market peaked?
Has it peaked now? It's incredibly interesting, and this is a, conversation I know many are having, with the incredible inflation of building supplies and labor shortage and so forth. It's unbelievable. I mean, the compression in investment values of, say, multifamily, which is core to us, property values have gone up 20-ish% in the past year. Many parts of the country, the same thing as in the home, you know, for sale home market. Property values, home values have gone up 15, 20, 25, 30%. But what is very different about the last cycle that we were just talking about is in that cycle, we had this oversupply of housing. Today, we are facing the greatest undersupply of housing. In addition, banking in general has remained much more disciplined than it was back then. So there aren't nurses who own five homes, to your point. There's a lot more equity in the market. And so just the fundamentals of supply and demand are just so constrained that I really think the biggest variable that could lead to decline in values is if interest rates were to go through some major spike. Nobody's expecting to see that coming, that the Fed would make those decisions. But if some reason they do and we see interest rates go up, that'll certainly slow the incredible growth in prices. Don't know if it'll lead to any decline, but I think it'll dramatically slow property values climbing. And then whenever building supplies come down and level back out, and the cost of building aren't so high, you know, that'll make a big impact as well. But it's interesting times. I think if we were sitting here in 2 years from now and having this conversation again, I think there's a greater probability in 2 years we're saying, hey, can you believe 2 years ago we could have bought something at this price, and surprised how much it's gone up in the next 2 years, versus the other way around, that we're looking back in 2 years saying, hey, remember when the home down the street was selling for 700 grand and now it's selling for less? I think that's a less likely conversation. But we're certainly planning on our end for volatility and risk, just like we were doing 2 years ago at this time, not knowing it would be COVID. But we knew the market was really hot at that point, and something would come, and preparing accordingly. And that's, you know, a big part of what we're doing in our organization today, preparing for some form of volatility that's going to come in the near future.
I don't know, man. I look at this like our home 2 years ago, it was probably $500,000. Now it's $700,000, and people are paying $100,000 cash on top of that. So $800,000. I don't understand it. I don't know who has that kind of cash just sitting around. Why are they so desperate to buy something? My dad always says, if things don't make sense, there's something you don't know.
I like that. Right? I mean, there's no doubt. I mean, the government's infused a lot of cash into the market. Right. And it's doing what it's supposed to do, right? The goal was to put the cash in the market to stimulate the economy, and it is certainly doing that in many, many regards. So it is interesting for sure. It is hard to understand where, to your point, how people are coming up with the cash, because it's not 100% financing to the level it was, you know, back in the last cycle. So where are all these buyers coming from? Where is all this cash coming from? Is hard to understand in a lot of markets for sure. And I've talked to, you know, some of the smartest and most well-known economists at, you know, big organizations like Goldman Sachs just last week, and they can't explain that piece to the puzzle. They can't explain where all this cash is coming from, how so many people can afford to own right now with where home prices are. The payment side makes sense. With today's low interest rates, you can look and say, you know, the average monthly payment today is in some cases less than it would have been 2 years ago or 4 years ago, 5 years ago, despite the incredible growth in values because rates are so low. But still, where did you come up with the deposit? How are people coming up with so much cash and qualifying from an income standpoint, a debt service ratio? It's interesting for sure.
Liberty's leave policy was tremendous. Having the ability to take 16 weeks off, fully paid to bond with my child, was an incredible experience.
At Liberty Mutual, you can find a career that supports you at every step, even baby steps. We offer up to 16 weeks parental leave for new moms and dads. And because not everyone's pathway to parenthood looks the same, we offer robust fertility, surrogacy, and adoption benefits too. Learn more at libertymutualcareers.com and pursue your tomorrow today.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So how'd you build this elite organization?
Well, you know, for me, as I mentioned earlier, I got into real estate in October 2006. And what I learned quickly as a salesperson is my time was best served doing the things that most salespeople know their time is best served doing, which was being in front of people or being on the phone to get in front of people. And I realized that those were the things that I had to be spending my time doing, and very quickly realized that if I was doing those things well, I didn't have much time to do anything else. So literally about a month into the business, I hired my first assistant, and I hired her part-time. By the end of that first week, she was working more than full-time. A couple weeks later, I hired another full-time assistant. And 2 months after that, the third. So I had three full-time assistants supporting me as a single salesperson within 3 months of being in real estate. Two out of those three are still with me to this day. And started, you know, delegating. I wasn't the best leader at the time, didn't have the best leadership methods. There was a lot of, you know, dump everything on to the great ladies and they'd handle it. But freeing myself out to be on appointments, to be on the phone. And as I did that, you know, things started taking a quick turn. Got to the point I couldn't handle all the sales appointments. I couldn't handle all the leads. And so I started then bringing in junior salespeople, and I was doing all the inside sales activity and setting them appointments with lower value opportunities. And then that quickly, you know, took off. And now all of a sudden I was in, you know, a position of running an organization and having, you know, to lead a team and develop process and structure. And how do I take myself out of being on appointments and automating that and really building out a sales process and putting video into place to make sure everybody's delivering the same presentation and a lot of training on scripting and so forth. You had to start, you know, really running things more like a business. And as I was trying to figure out how to do all these things, you know, I'm always been an avid, you know, learner and reader and obviously, you know, probably all your listeners here listening to a podcast like this are the same and curious and wanting to learn. And so I'm reading a lot of books and studying and finding out how to be a better leader and how to improve as a marketer and as a salesperson and as a manager and all these things. And it was helping. And then all of a sudden, you know, about 10 years ago, you know, we were about a 25, 30 person company at the time. And I read a book called Traction at the time, which is on a system called EOS. And I was like, wow, this is great. Finally, somebody who kind of put all these ideas kind of together into an organized system that could be kind of plugged and played into an organization. So we kind of went implemented EOS into our organization. It's an entrepreneurial organizational system, and it helped put structure around things like running meetings and prioritizing and setting vision to your organization, et cetera. And that was a big moment for us, and that helped continue to accelerate, you know, our growth. And I have never been, you know, afraid to hire, never been afraid to continue to invest into the organization. And we've now, you know, it's kind of, we look back now, you know, we're 15 years in, we've grown 60% or more annually every year. But last year, where we grew 48% by choice due to, you know, some of the volatility of COVID, grown 300 to 500% every 3 year period, any 3 years you pick in the last 15 years. And we've really put this discipline of growth into our organization. And after a little bit of time of running EOS, we realized we weren't really running EOS anymore because it was only a piece to the puzzle. And we ended up taking ideas from the greats like Jim Collins or Vern Harnish or John Maxwell or many other great, you know, thought leaders and implementing them and then building a lot of tools and so forth to actually be able to run and put structure around something growing so quickly. And as we were expanding into new business lines and so forth. And so a few years ago, we realized, you know, we had built kind of our own operating system, and we've taken the last number of years to refine that, which we call the Elite Execution System. And that's what I just wrote a book on and called Building an Elite Organization. But that operating system is not only what we run all of our businesses on, it's actually what we teach to the real estate operators and developers and builders and so forth that we invest in. Because at our core business today, we're an investment company, and we actually lend money and invest equity with other businesses, mainly real estate operators. So it became really critical for us that they were running businesses that were disciplined and well-run so that we could mitigate our risk of investing capital with them. And that's really been kind of the secret to our kind of continued success and growth has been putting this discipline system in place in our organization and in the businesses that we invest in. And it's led to really consistent, repeatable, results, over these last, you know, many years.
Very cool. So you're brand new in sales. How did you afford that first assistant? Did you just take a risk? You just knew you would figure it out?
Yeah, great question. So in the beginning, you know, what I did is, and this is, I think, something that, you know, a lot of people have done and should do, you know, I started in real estate until I started having real estate sales. And for me, you know, people can look at it and say I was an overnight success because, you know, by the end of my first year in real estate sales, I was the top real estate agent in my office of 150. And within a few months later, I was the top salesperson in my market of 2,200. And so it looks like, you know, that they're just like, I must just had immediate success, but it took me 5 months to have my first sale. I didn't have a closing to 5 months into the business. So I didn't make a dollar my first 5 months, and was spending money, to your point. So what I continued to do is I continued to sell alarm systems through the first, many months until I had enough revenue coming in to stop. I mean, literally in my beginning days, as crazy as or silly as it might sound, I would literally go knock on doors to sell alarm systems. And the most common reason people would tell me that they didn't want to buy an alarm system is, we don't need one. We're selling the house. And then I'd flip on my realtor hat and I'd say, well, I can help you with that. And I can actually guarantee your house to sell. Right. So imagine hiring the guy trying to sell you an alarm system, knocking on your door to then sell your house. But I was like, you know, I just need to get in front of people. And any which way I can do that, if I get in front of people, good things will happen. I literally did the things, and I know it's harder to do today, but of, you know, picking up the phone book and calling people. Right. It didn't really matter. I mean, I, you know, just get on the phone with people, get in front of people, and good things will happen. I was fortunate. I had saved up a little bit of money from selling a lot of alarm systems, and I continue to do so a bit to be able to start. And then, but the great thing is, you know, it took a while to get going, 5 months in to have my first sale. And that second month, or 6 month, technically second month of actual sales, you know, I had five, and the next month it was 15. And by the end of, you know, the end of that first year, I had 67 sales, made 250 grand, and was off and running, and, you know, doubled the next year and so forth. But, you know, you have to be able to, find a way to invest, and doesn't mean in money. You know, I could have got people to work at no cost and given them a split of the commissions. There's a lot of ways you can do it to kind of bootstrap it in the beginning and do the hard work that, again, I think most people make excuses to why they don't do it. Why most salespeople who know that, you know, getting in front of clients and prospecting are their most valuable activities, but find every excuse under the sun not to do it, you know, it's easy to come up with reasons why you can't. Harder to do the work that's necessary.
How many of those people went with you, right? So as you knock on their door for ADT, but you're like, hey, I'm also a realtor. Cause I see all the time, I see people online, you know, hey, I'm a CBD, you know, salesman and realtor. I'm a massage therapist and realtor. I mean, like, come on, people, you know, I would be quite hesitant to entrust my home sale to an alarm salesman.
Yeah,
you know, but
that's a mental, you know, that's an easy excuse, right? It's an easy excuse for me to say, hey, that's why I'm not going to talk about that I sell real estate, because people already have discounted me because I showed up there to sell them an alarm system, right? I was 20 years old. I mean, you mentioned I'm relatively young now. At the time, I was really young, and I, you know, looked probably like I was 16. I mean, not only am I knocking on doors, I look like I'm 16 years old, and not much older than that, right? It's easy to discount. So, you know, what I would do is, you know, generally, and this is what I would do to help grow my security sales as well, as I would take young salespeople out with me. And they'd come door knock. It was the only way, because I kind of skipped over the story. You know, in addition to selling alarm systems, I built a sales team and started teaching other salespeople how to sell alarm systems. And the best way to get them to sell alarm systems was to take them with me out knocking on doors. And so I would, you know, take four or five people out with me. And then it made it a little bit easier to position myself as, hey, I'm just out here helping these young sales guys who work in my sales organization. But my main business is real estate. You know, saying that, you know, I might not have even sold a house yet, but, you know, I was positioning myself that was my main business. This was just a sales team that I run, and kind of elevating myself, at least in my mind, and how I was positioning myself, why I was out there knocking on doors and being confident more than anything, right? Being confident in myself, being confident I could bring value to this person, and not getting myself hung up on and worrying about somebody, you know, somebody discounting me over that. And then having a strong selling proposition, right? When I got in the door, I didn't sound like their friend, the realtor. I didn't just come in there and say, yeah, you know, please list your home with me because I'll do it for 5% commission. And, you know, I came in there with a strong value proposition, strong, you know, printed literature that I could hand them to look professional. Of course, nice card. I dressed professional. And I was there with a real presentation that back in 2006, people didn't have, you know, a real PowerPoint and a computer in my hand and in an organized method of showing what value I could bring, how I was going to market their home better, how I would guarantee the sale, how I could guarantee their sale. And it was such a differentiated offering that it wasn't even competing against anybody else. If I could just get the opportunity, just get the at bat.
Yeah, very cool. Yeah, I like the idea, yeah, changing that up. And, you know, you're there to introduce a team, and they see you in a different light. And because I tell people all the time, like, I hate selling. You know, I want to anticipate the objection and cut it off, you know, yeah, address it before it even comes up. So I just become the easy and obvious choice, you know. So you're going to put forth effort either before or after the sale, you know, so before or during, right? So I'd rather put it in before and just ease into the sale.
Agree. Yeah, we spent tons of time on that, and you know, learning the old school method of knocking on doors is a great way to kind of cut your teeth there. But same thing. I hated the thin selling. You want to make it such a logical decision, has always been my approach, that it's a no brainer to make. And so there's simple, you know, tactics to do that have been proven again and again. It starts with genuinely being confident that you're going to bring value to this person. Taking general interest in listening, you know, it's been years and years training. We run multiple different sales teams now today across the organization, and understanding, right, the great saying, we have two ears and one mouth, and listening as the main way to sell, really understanding what their challenges, what their goals, what their motivations are. And then providing a value proposition that anticipates those concerns and issues before they can raise them is the exact approach we've taken. And I think many really great salespeople have as well.
So funny. I hear dogs running around with their chain. We're house sitting or puppy sitting. And this is the coolest dog. He's a little Tijuana rescue. And he's the biggest snuggler. But dude, literally this morning, I'm laying in bed, about to get up, and this dog just climbs right up and licks me right in the mouth. And I'm like, oh, I guess it's time to get up. Like, what in the heck? Oh, man. But I digress. So the things you've learned and your new system, is it applicable to any type of business? Is it suited for ideally for real estate? Like, how does that work?
Yeah, definitely for any business that's already generated a certain amount of success, meaning they have a product or an offering or a service that the market's already deemed, you know, valuable, meaning they've already, you know, they're already having some success. They've already running $1 million, $2 million, $5 million business, but now looking to scale. And I think the challenge many face, it's not hard, it's not easy to scale a business, and it's much harder to scale a business that's profitable at the same time. And you know, when you go out there and you say, hey, I want to get better at sales, right? Or I want to get better at marketing. You know, you can go read 50 books about the power of content marketing, right? And if you could put all the energy in the world around generating great content, but if you don't have of course people who are listening to your content, it brings you no value. But even if you could generate tons of people who want your service, but you operationally can't handle them, you can't, you know, handle calling them all back, you can't appropriately service them, you can't provide your product to all of those people, you know, it doesn't do you any good, right? You go out there and read a book, tells you the key to growing a great business is all about leadership, and you can become the greatest leader. But if you don't have clients to sell to, or products that the market wants, or, you know, ability to execute on them. Again, you could be the greatest leader in the world, and you're not going to run a great profitable business, especially over long periods of time. So the way we think about it is every organization has four quadrants, which are strategy, people, operations, and acceleration. And acceleration is sales and marketing, you know, integrated, which is, you know, really critical, I think, in today's organizations. And you need all of those quadrants working together, part of one plan, that are growing at the same pace. You need operations to keep up with the pace of your sales and marketing growth. And you need the people in place to be able to keep up. You need each one to be part of a plan that's working together in order to grow consistently year over year, and to do so profitably. And a lot of the big success stories we hear, certainly in real estate, but in all industries, are these great, you know, organizations, largely tech companies, that are growing by 5,000% a year. But they're growing off, you know, venture capital, and they're growing and they're losing money. And they got a business model that works. If they succeed and they get the right market share and get acquired, it works. And many, there's been a number of companies who've hit home runs there. And I give them lots and lots of credit for accomplishing that. But for most of us, you know, we need to be able to grow a business that can generate enough cash flow to continue to sustain itself and allow us to grow. And that's much harder to do in a lot of ways. And certainly much harder to do it over and over again, year over year. And, you know, we've been on the Inc. 5000 list now 9 straight years. So making the list, of course, is a good accomplishment. It measures your growth over the last 3 years. But what I'm most proud of is that we've done it 9 straight years. Last year, we were the 4th fastest growing company in America that had made the Inc. 5000 list 5 or more times ever. So reason for this, because so few companies can maintain the pace of growing year over year over year. Because it's hard to grow all the sides of the organization, you know, together consistently, where you don't have to then you grow a lot of sales and then you couldn't handle it operationally. And now you have to recalibrate and slow down, and, you know, where you can continue that pace regardless of the market conditions, regardless of we're in the middle of COVID or property values are going up 20% a year or they're declining, be able to continue that pace of growth and adjust to the volatility and change around you. Is a hard thing to do. It's something that requires a lot of discipline, and that's what our system at the core is: disciplined thought, disciplined action, and disciplined people. Having discipline run through your organization, which is often the opposite of what entrepreneurial people think that they want, is discipline. That's often the opposite of why they started their own business, is because they wanted to have structure and discipline. But through structure and organization, to how you run your meetings, how you hire, how you develop your talent, how you choose what's most important, how you communicate, that's actually what frees you up to innovate, to develop new ways of doing things, and to really drive your organization forward.
Are you saying discipline equals freedom? Is that what you're saying?
It sure does.
I think I've heard that somewhere before. Very cool. So your book is out. We're linking to that. I've got a couple of links to your other website. So, I mean, people that are listening, where do you want to send them? Where should they go first?
Yeah, if you're interested in the book and also a lot of free resources and content, you can go to dlpelite.com, dlpelite.com, get access to the book, a lot of free resources and tools as well. Book will provide a lot of value. It's not theoretical. It's a blueprint. It's a very tactical, you know, full system to go about implementing and putting in place into your business and growing your organization. It's one of those types of books where you're going to want to, be taking notes and highlighting, and it's very, you know, referencing back again. No doubt, even if you just listen to it on Audible, which I do lots of, you'll have some nuggets and some takeaways, for sure. But it really is meant to help take organizations from 1 million, 5 million, 10 million to wherever you want to be, 50 million, 100 million, 500 million. And we've done it in a number of our businesses, and we've helped many organizations grow through that kind of growth. Some of ours, 300, 400, 500% kind of 3-year growth, year over year, and be able to pick up that pace of growth over time. And then if you just want more information about the things that we do at DLP across our 12 business lines, and, or just, you know, get more insight on us and use us in any way as a research and development department, as a lot of our operators we help, they use it as their, you know, their R&D department, you know, rip off and duplicate, you're welcome to go to dlpcapital.com and take a look, and you'll see if you read the book, you know, a lot of what we talk about in action, from how we go about hiring people and make, you know, presenting ourselves to potential employees and creating great attractive job ads and so forth. And great things about our system and the book is there's nothing in there that's theoretical. It's exactly what we do right here, right now, and the and are helping many other organizations do as well.
Very nice. Well, you know, I was going to get it, but you didn't say I could grow to $1 trillion. So I'm looking for the $1 trillion plan. I mean, you mentioned 500 million. Why so limiting, man? What's going on?
Well, we teach what we've been able to do so far. So we're at a few hundred million a year today. So we know we can get you there. And as we continue our growth, we'll continue to develop and continue to take our game up to the next level and roll those learnings and research out to those who are on the journey with us.
Sounds good. All right, Don, take care of those dogs. Enjoy the mountains, the cool breeze of Asheville. And thanks for coming on the show, man. It's been great.
Thanks, Wes. Really appreciate it.
All right, dude. Have a great day.
Told you it was good. I loved his grit, his story, his perseverance. If I get in front of people, good things will happen. Can't speak. Learn about USPs, unique selling propositions. Dan Kennedy. Dan Kennedy is the reason I'm where I am today. I love how he has pivoted. If you want to learn more about the Traction book, I reviewed it on episode 298. So it's quite a ways back. Good book. Things you can apply to your business. But, you know, if you get that one, make sure you get Don's as well. Building an Elite Organization, the Blueprint to Scaling a High-Growth, High-Profit Business. He has dialed it in. So that's my goal, bring you good people, good insight, actionable tips. Okay, I don't want you just listening. I want you applying. If you struggle with that, if you need some accountability, if you need some give and take, join our group, sellmoreofeverything.com. There's videos in there. There's spreadsheets. There's templates. There's a workbook. But I think the most valuable thing is the live weekly calls along with the group. You can ask questions at any time, get answers from others, but you get answers from me to help you overcome your own adversity, obstacles, and achieve your goals. Okay? Sellmoreofeverything.com. Head on over there now. Thanks for listening. I'll go sell something.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.